Welcome to the Rotary Community Heroes of Hope. I'm your host, Judy Zulfikar, and I'm thrilled to be joined by my amazing co-host, Jamie Zinn, District Governor of Rotary District 5330. Together, we will take you on a journey to discover the incredible impact Rotarians have on our community and around the world. Get ready to be inspired by our Rotary Heroes of Hope. Well, Jamie, it's time for our next guest. We have Bill Chase with us today. How excited are you?
Oh, I'm really excited, and I'm really anxious to hear about this program.
So, Bill, can you please tell us a little bit about your Rotary journey and what you're here to talk with us about today?
I sure would. Thanks for the opportunity to be interviewed on your podcast. You're nationwide.
We're worldwide, Bill. Just so you know. Yeah. World Wide Web. That's what that WWW is.
Sorry, that was my fault. I'm Bill Chase, and I moved to Southern California from Michigan, where I was pretty much involved with a general dental practice in a small community outside Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I joined Rotary in 1973. You can do the math. This year is my 50th year in Rotary.
Oh, congratulations. That's cool.
Thank you. And it's been a wonderful journey ever since I graduated from dental school from the University of Detroit in 1972. I joined Rotary in 1973. So I've seen a lot of changes, a lot of good changes happening in our organization, and really pleased to talk about something near and dear to me that changed my entire professional life, and that was the 3-H grant.
Well, and I do want to mention, too, and he's being very modest, but our wonderful Bill Chase is also a past district governor. And where did you serve as a governor of Rotary?
Oh, thanks, Judy. Yeah, I was governor in District 6400, which was considered an international district. Our area covered southeast Lower Michigan and the southwest part of Ontario, Canada. And I went through the ranks of the club as a president in 1983. And then as district governor in 1989-90. But what propelled me into that position was the 3-H grant and the different things that I was able to experience as a Rotary volunteer through that grant.
Can you tell us what the 3-H grant stands for?
Sure. It was a grant that was originated in 1978. It refers to health, hunger, and humanity. And the Rotary International president under whose watch this was created was Clem Renouf from Australia. And he created the grant to improve health, to alleviate hunger, and enhance cultural and social development among peoples of the world. So little did Clem know back in 1978 that this would be the precursor to what is now considered the Polio Plus campaign that's been going on since 1985, and we're still in the throes of trying to eradicate the wild polio virus from the world. We only have two countries left, Pakistan and Afghanistan. But this 3-H grant was really the originator and the precursor to the Polio Plus program.
So
and how I got involved in it, if it's okay to go on, was in 1984, I was looking at a copy of our organization's magazine called Rotarian at the time, and I saw an article about 3-H grants and how dentists could take an opportunity to apply for a grant that would subsidize his or her complete costs to treat people in a needy country for a month. So I called Rotary International, and God bless her soul, she's no longer with us. But the head of the 3-H grants department, the administrative department, was Roz Benford. And at the time in 1984, I think she was in her 80s. And she ran that like a ship. She didn't let anything get by her. She wanted to know, are you a licensed, active, practicing dentist? And what are you applying for? And why are you applying for the 3-H grant? And I said, I just read an article and it was really interesting. And I think that I could take a month off and kind of pursue a volunteer stint in a foreign country. And she said, well, where do you want to go? And I said, well, where are you sending dentists? And she said, we have two options. We have, you can work in Hong Kong Harbor, mm-hmm. on floating barges treating Vietnamese boat people. Or you can go to a clinic that doesn't move.
Yeah, I think it would be a little hard to do dentistry on a moving boat.
Well, yes.
You know, it's hard enough for me to keep the patient stationary and do a good job. So I said, you know, I think I'm going to opt to go to the Philippines and do my 1 month stint there. Well, it wasn't more than 3 months later. I was on a plane headed for San Francisco from Detroit.
Wow, that's fast. That turned around quick.
It did. It was very, very fast because they needed so many dentists
right.
to provide service to people in countries that have never seen a dentist before. So it was kind of a, oh my God, it was a mixed blessing of experiences. When I got there, I was confronted with a one-room clinic, 10 by 10, no bigger than one of my bedrooms in the house. No running water, no electricity.
And what were the major issues that you saw when you got there? I mean, what kind of treatments were they really having you do?
The only thing I could do with no water, no electricity, is to take out teeth. And the dentist who had preceded me in the clinic was from England. And he brought all of his extraction forceps, gauze, and cotton rolls with him, along with anesthesia. Thank the Lord, that he left in the clinic for me because I was not told to bring any supplies at all with me.
Oh, so you got there and going, oh, wow, I have a room and a chair.
And I'm here, but nothing to work with. So we made an announcement in the compound. The compound, incidentally, was managed by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And it was one of many, many Southeast Asian camps for escaping Vietnamese boat people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other closest camp was Bataan. We've heard about Bataan and the death march and so on and so forth in World War II. But that's where all the people who came from other clinics and other compounds around Southeast Asia, once they learned English, they would go to Bataan and then they would be placed by our State Department to various areas in the United States. Under the Reagan administration, when I was working in the Philippines.
So how many patients do you think you would see in a day while you were there for a month?
I figured that I worked Monday through Friday, and then we had the weekend off. But I figured that I saw about 50 patients a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
And I took out, on average, two or three teeth per patient.
Per patient per day. And did you have like staff there to help, or were you kind of like a one-man show?
No, I had Vietnamese boat people, young men who would serve as my dental assistants, who would hand me they didn't know English and I didn't know Tagalog and I didn't know Vietnamese. And so we were just kind of pointing, I need that next, I need that forceps next, I need gauze. But the real surprising aspect of this whole thing is that when I was practicing back in Michigan, were under rigorous policies and mandates by OSHA to sterilize our equipment. My sterilization solution was peroxide.
And that's all you had, because no water, no heat, no steam, no nothing, huh?
Nothing.
Now, was this the only time that you have done this, and this the only country, or did you do it after?
Well, funny you should ask, Jimmy. I picked up a tapeworm, a 12-foot tapeworm in my intestines that was living in me.
Oh, my goodness.
While I was in the Philippines.
From going there?
From eating an hors d'oeuvre laced with raw fish.
Mm.
And I thought a couple days later, I just wasn't feeling well and I thought I had malaria. So I took one day off. I told the compound director, you know, I just don't feel good. I've got to go downtown and be tested for malaria. And he says, well, we don't have anybody to take you. You're going to have to walk. So I walked 2 miles to get tested. And only being told that I might have had typhoid fever.
Oh, lovely.
And not malaria, because the incubation period for malaria is 2 weeks. I'd only been there 3 days, so it could have been malaria. And so they said, well, when you get back to the States, have your physician run some tests on typhoid fever. Well, it wasn't typhoid. I went to my physician, and we did a upper and lower GI. And they found this 12-foot tapeworm living within me.
Okay, wow. So that was scary.
It was very, and I didn't feel well at all during the time that I was back for at least 3 months, and I was on mega doses of antibiotics to segment the tapeworm, and then to eliminate it through my normal system. But I didn't feel good at all for 3 months. But I finally did get rid of the worm.
Wow. So now that you had this experience, did you go back to another country and do this again?
It took me 8 years to get the courage up to call Roz, God bless her heart, she was still living. And I said, Roz, it's your old friend, Bill Chase. I'm ready to do this again. She said, where have you been? And I said, I know it's been 8 years, but I'm ready to go back. Do I have to go back to the Philippines? She said, that compound's closed. All the refugees. And I uncorked a bottle of wine. And I'll tell you, I think I was drunk that day. And I said, well, where can you send me? She said, we have a fairly nice clinic on the Amazon River in Brazil. And I said, I've never been to Brazil.
Amazon River? What are those fish? The
piranha.
Piranha. So you don't have tapeworms, you have piranhas. Okay.
Well, there's a story about that too. I have lots of stories. How long do we have on this interview?
I know. Wow, this is going to turn into a series.
So in 1992, I was relegated to a clinic in Brazil on the Amazon River. And this had a clinic, at least it had running water and electricity, but it had cinder blocks that were hollowed out. So when I was working on patients, birds would fly over my head. In and out.
Oh my goodness. Always an adventure.
Okay, Bill, this is not really believable here. Come on. Okay.
Dr. Doolittle.
Believe me, I wouldn't make this. I couldn't make this up.
Yes.
So I went back after that month and I said, you know, that clinic had so much potential that I'm going to do a fundraiser for our district and send money back so they can refurbish it for one more time. And I'll go back to see, you know, that it's been used properly. I raised $150,000.
Oh, congratulations.
On a district-wide raffle. Everybody was so supportive. And I sent the money back down. I wired it down. They had redone the entire clinic. They'd made closed-off walls. Birds weren't flying in and out anymore. I had high-speed handpieces. I had everything but one thing that I really needed was air conditioning. But
I can't have everything, Bill.
I know it, but I was still soliciting for those donations. And I told the one of the compound directors, I said, I think this is my last year. He said, why? He said, you can't do that until I show you what I have to show you. So I said, well, okay, what's the big secret? This was the day before I left, mm-hmm. my second year there. And I went down and they had my name above the clinic.
Oh.
They had named the clinic after me. Now, I'm thinking, in my own mind, this is my last year. But unbeknownst to me, I spent the next 11 years there.
Wow. That's awesome.
So I did a total of 13 trips to Brazil and one trip to the Philippines, all because of the 3-H grant.
Now, how, being in the Palm Springs Sunup Club, are you still involved with a 3-H grant with your club in some way, shape, or form?
Well, as we know, the 3-H grant that was created by Clemmer Newf in 78 is no longer funded by Rotary International. They stopped funding what we knew as 3-H in 2010. There's an offshoot to that. They collapsed that grant because of the decrease in available world funds to the foundation. But as an offshoot to that, they wanted to create bigger, more plentiful and expensive global grants from $150,000 to $200,000. So, you know, in one way, and I told a fellow that was speaking at the Noon Club, he's a trustee of the foundation, Larry Lunford is his name, and I asked him, you know, is there a grant that Rotary International TRF could start again, like the 3-H grant, because the dental needs are so great among the populations of the world. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you could do a reverse grant. I said, well, I'm talking about other countries. We don't need really dentistry except Appalachia here, which is still understaffed and underfunded. But I'm thinking more about developing countries like in Africa and so on and so forth. He said, well, I'll look into it. But, you know, they've got other fish to fry in the foundation. They've got other focuses, and they know what they want. And I don't think that to fund a dentist or a physician to do what I did a month at a time, I think that's a thing of the past.
Aren't there, well, within some districts, I think there are some districts that focus on dentistry, to some degree, like, well, it's more cleft palate, but like a thousand smiles or rotoplast or so I think we're still seeing it. But I agree with you. It is an area where there needs to be a greater focus. How do you see it today that a Rotary Club can help create more focus towards this and to help in this area? Do you have some ideas there?
Yeah. You know, when I came out here to move permanently and retire in 2005, I knew of the Smile Factory, and that's a nonprofit organization was flourishing at the time. And I had a good friend who was on the board, and he said, why don't you join us and be a board member? So the very first meeting that I attended, the dental director comes up to me and said, do you still have a active license? And I said, I do. He said, well, forget the board position. We want you on the van.
We want you in the field.
We wanted you to do clinical dentistry. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I did. I worked for them for about 4 years and became dental director because the fellow who had asked me to serve as clinician was retiring at the time. And he was in, I think, late 80s. He'd done it for years. But his daughter was executive director of the 501c3. So I worked on that van, and we were taking the van all around to schools, elementary schools in the Palm Springs Unified School District. And I have to tell you, and you're going to be amazed at what this statement's going to come to. The teeth in the Coachella Valley are worse than the teeth on the Amazon River.
Is that because of the water supply?
It's not only the water. We do have fluoride. We have one part per million fluoride in our water supply. But it's the low-income, poverty homes that don't have toothbrushes or mouth rinses or floss or toothpaste. And to keep a young child who is at that poverty level fed and happy, they feed them junk food.
It's sugar. All that sugar. Yeah.
So it's just appalling what I saw in the van when I was working with the Smile Factory. Now, those vans, we had two of them. They were completely outfitted. They were beautiful vans. They had three operatories, surgical operatories. And those vans were sold to Borrego Medical, and I lost track of them. This is what we need throughout the district. If we could think of using a grant to purchase a mobile dental van, similar to the one that I worked on for 4 years, to be able to find dental volunteers in the area of the district to maybe work once a month, once every couple months, take that van all around our district and provide dental services for kids who would otherwise not be able to receive it because of the price. The price of dentistry today, as we all know, it is exorbitant, and it's not going to get any better. But I can see that, Jamie. I can see that as a project through the TRF where we could actually, the district owns a van, and then someone would operate it, control the amount of volunteers coming and going, and have a whole crew that would maintain there's a lot of maintenance to a van like that.
I think that's.
I see that as a real positive.
I think that's a great idea. And just as a side note, my club, Lake Arrowhead Mountain Sunrise, actually every year they have a dental program that they do. Now it's not repair, but they go out to the school systems all up in the San Bernardino Mountain area, and they evaluate the kids' teeth. They do a whole other set of procedures, if you will. And I think they might be a club that could be interested in expanding this because they have that as an interest already.
I think this really shows, you know, all the stories that you bring to us, Bill, and the opportunities that are in Rotary. It's a really good example of how Rotarians, they see a problem, they, you know, figure out a solution, they work together to make that solution come to fruition, and it really changes lives for children here at home and all over the world, children and people all over the world.
Absolutely. It makes an indelible mark and a permanent mark, because this is what we're all about as Rotarians, is service above self. And, you know, I couldn't think of a stronger mantra to base my whole outlook on the rest of my life: service above self. You never stop giving unless, you know, you're physically disabled or you have other problems that you can't go forward with what we stand for as Rotarians.
Agreed. I agreed. And I think that, you know, your club and the clubs in the Coachella Valley and our entire district, we continue to show every single day service above self, and to our current RI president's theme, creating hope in the world. We continue to do that day in and day out. And I think this program you're talking about is something that we should take a little interest in and see if we can't, you know, garner some folks to champion it and see what we can do in this area.
Sounds like you've got a new adventure, Bill.
Count me in, because I'm ready, willing, and able to do whatever you need to do to get this off the ground. Back in 2014, I really wanted to keep a journal of my experiences through the 3H grant program from 1984 to the last volunteer stint that I did in Brazil in 2010. So it was almost a 25-year span. And I thought, you know, I'm going to write a book, self-publish it, and be able to look back on that as a journal. But then I got to thinking, you know, maybe this could benefit other people, like dental students or dentists who are thinking about retirement, but don't really want to give up dentistry completely yet, where they've maintained their active license, where they could go out and deliver services. Not necessarily through a 3H grant, but on their own money. And, you know, it would only cost, out of a month a stint, it would probably cost the practitioner about $3,000 to go into remote areas.
Right.
You know, so when I wrote the book in 2014, I actually have sold 500 copies.
Congratulations.
All the money now is earmarked for the TRF.
And that's the Rotary Foundation.
The Rotary Foundation. And I want to be able to give this book to potential volunteers. In the back of the book, it lists all the responsibilities of a dental volunteer, what to look out for when you're in a foreign country, when you don't know the language, you don't have any friends, you don't know the people, and how to guide them through this very delicate experience that they're going to think, oh my God, why did I ever sign up for this? But I think this will help those volunteers to maybe ease their experience a little bit through reading this book. But it's digital. It's on Amazon.com, and it sells for $350.
So what is the name?
It's called In Chase of a Cause.
In Chase of a Cause. Very well done, Mr. Bill Chase.
Thank you.
So that is good. Well, your experience is definitely an inspiration, I'm sure, to many, and hopefully it will continue to be an inspiration to many more. And those that are listening, you know, that are looking for a cause to really, you know, express their passions for giving in the world, this sounds like a really good project and another fun adventure for you and all of the Rotarians that come along with you.
Great. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity today, and thanks a lot for allowing me to tell you a little bit about my experiences and how Rotary has changed my life.
Thanks, Bill. You have really inspired me, as you know, all along my career journey here with Rotary. And I would like to reach out and talk to you a little bit more about this program and see how we can't make it more well known, and see if District 5330 can't make a difference.
I'd love to. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks, Judy.
All right.
And thank you for your your expert production manager.
Thanks. Have a great day, Bill.
Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. All right. Bye-bye.
So that wraps up this episode of Heroes of Hope. We are so happy that we have an audience out there listening. We want you to subscribe, share, and tell your friends about the Rotary community Heroes of Hope, because that's how we get the word out about the impact we're having in this world.